looking now at some information about jobs and needs in the South to set alongside the statistics relative to poverty. Between 1960 and 70, non-farm jobs in 15 southern states jumped 49%, which is an absolute gain of 674,000 jobs. Half of these, or almost half of these, were in manufacturing. Problem, though, in distribution of these jobs. The abundant supply of low-wage labor in southern rural areas were the prime.
Interview with Norman Bishop. Republican Congressional Committee. Field man in the South. May 2nd, 1974 in Atlanta.
Can you describe for us how the new operation works in terms of gubernatorial, congressional, Senate, and national committee?
Yeah. All the field work is coordinated out of the political division of the RNC. I file my reports. They put in a recorder, codephone recorder, in the Congressional Campaign Committee headquarters, Ed Terrell's office. He is in charge of the direct supervision of all field men. I file my reports every other night, including my schedule. And they type them, process them, send them to the appropriate committee or individual if there's someone besides the congressional, all the direct field operation is involved. And then send me copies down here, which is what I keep them for continual record of.
But you report on the gubernatorial, Senate, and congressional.
Right. For how many states?
Seven.
What are they?
South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Arkansas. And of course, this is where we probably will make our biggest gains this year, maybe the only gains. But we ought to end up with a net gain of two governors, six congressmen.
Could you kind of give us a state-by-state rundown?
Yeah.
Where you think we're going to end up at the end?
Okay, start out in South Carolina. We have two incumbents that we will retain, should retain easily. Ed Young will have the stiffest competition. He's in the 6th district. And Jenneret, who ran against him last time in primary against McMillan, will be his opponent. Unless Jenneret could get all of McMillan's old-time people with him, there's no chance of it making a really serious challenge to Young. I don't see that happening, so I think both Floyd Spence and Ed Young will be reelected with relative ease. In the 3rd district is Marshall Parker, who was a former state senator, ran twice for the U.S. Senate against Fritz Hollings. He's running the 3rd district, which has been vacated by Brian Dorn, who's running for governor as a Democrat. Dorn's district, the bottom of it is Aiken County, which is the most Republican county in the state of South Carolina. And Parker's from the northern end, Clinton. So he will be able to get a good backing of support up there. He's carried that district in both of his statewide elections, even though he lost the overall election. So we ought to win that one. Also, the Democrats don't have a real strong candidate in that race. The other race is the Tom Geddes district, 5th district. Geddes is retiring. We'd hope to get Bobby Richardson to run, the former baseball player, in which case it would have been a gimme. He was 2-1 ahead of everybody. Richardson decided not to run, and Lynn Phillips, who had already run twice for Congress in that district, is running. He's an attractive broadcasting executive. He got almost 40% of the vote last time, but right at the last, Strom Thurmond and the president ended up publicly backing Geddes. That's all. Cut the ground out from under him. Polls show him to be a little bit better than 50%, have a little better than 50% chance of winning that. The Democrats have to go through a primary with 6 competitors, and it'll be dirty, probably. In addition, there's an independent candidate who started to run as a Democrat who will also be in the general election. So I think Phillips, if we can get good, strong management in there, should be able to pull that one off. I'm counting that one as a winner. In Georgia, the top
race. What about in the gubernatorial
race? Oh, excuse me, gubernatorial race, okay. There's a primary between Dr. Jim Edwards from Charleston, who is a state senator and a longtime leader of the ultra-conservative group in South Carolina, especially in the 1st District Lowcountry. He's running, of course. General Westmoreland is the other candidate in the primary. Westmoreland's biggest problem probably will come in the primary. although most of the Republican officials don't think so. My concern is there's no way to get a real handle on the primary because they've never had a Republican, statewide Republican primary in South Carolina. And you've got all sorts of problems where the people understand that they don't have to vote for the Democrat if they vote in the Democrat primary. It's a question of whether they'll vote in the Republican primary and cast off the chance of voting for local offices in some of those areas where we won't have local officials running. What could happen is a very low Republican turnout. Edwards will come out of the low country with as many as 4,000 or 5,000 votes, just about assured. There'll be some anti-Westmoreland votes among Republican activists because he's not been a Republican. He vacillated early about whether he was going to run as a Republican or not, and a bunch of other mistakes. So I think Westmoreland's main problem could be the primary. If he gets to that, I think he and most of the Democrats I've talked to over there are just about conceding that, especially with the problems Democrats have, that Westmoreland probably will really take it big. Dorn was the early favorite in the Democrat primary. He really expected to get the nomination without any battle of any significance. That's the way it's worked in 62. But Morris, the lieutenant governor, decided he was going to run. In the meantime, Dorn's campaign has just come tumbling down in disarray. He looks like an old flannel-mouthed politician, which is pretty well what he is. But he's got the big money and a lot of the leadership behind him. The only real enthusiasm that I detect thus far in the Democrat primary is from a fellow from Charleston, Pug Ravenel, whose residency requirements may keep him from being a real candidate. And they've got, the Democrats have got several suits out now challenging that residency requirement. He's been living in, I think he voted in New York in 72.
I think that's been resolved in Ravenel's favor.
It has been resolved?
I understand that. Okay. This week.
I haven't been there in about 2 weeks, so it wasn't resolved then. But Ravenel, I gather, is sort of like Jimmy Carter, Dale Bumpers, liberal-type Democrat. And from our standpoint, I think that's good because you know, he'll be locked off to a minority segment of the population. And the Democrat probably will move in that direction anyhow, so as it has in the Virginia, some of the other areas. So I think that'll, I'd really like to see him get the nomination. I think it would help our situation. But I think in the end, Westmoreland will probably win the nomination and win the election. Oh, the Senate race, our candidate there is a joke. I'm really wishing we could get, still find a way to get her out of the race and a stronger candidate in because, given Westmoreland's likely surge this year, given some inbred weaknesses I think Fritz Hollings has, if they were exploited, and we could at least so severely damage him it would knock him out of the vice presidential consideration in 76. Let's see. Oh, we've got a candidate against Jim Mann in the 4th District, Greenville, Spartanburg area up there. But I don't think he'll, I think he may get 35-40% vote. I don't believe he can beat Jim Mann. In the 1st District, we've got a ghost candidate who is just filling the seat under the possibility we might be able to find another candidate against Mendel Davis. We hope to get Mendel Rivers Jr. to switch, but the local Republicans there sort of put a micro inch into that, and he didn't switch. And so we don't have a strong candidate there right now. It's one I think with the right candidate we could win. Sidey Limehouse ran 72. And the guy, I believe, 54% of the vote. I mean, excuse me, 44% of the vote, 45. So you know that with a campaign that did not have professional management, and Sidey is not the best candidate we could run in the area. But I think Mendel Davis might be a shot if you find the right person. I don't think it's a likelihood right now. But. Okay, in Georgia, we've got Quincy Collins, who is going to run in the 7th District against John Davis. Collins is a former POW, just retired the day before yesterday, as a great speaker. he has the advantage of not having been involved in 7th District Republican politics in the past. So he should be able to bypass the factionalism that seems to be a big problem in the district. Davis, I understand, is in trouble, and his staff has problems, I understand, 90 days ago. His administrative assistant was trying to find another job. I understand his drinking problem has recurred. And he probably have a primary challenge from Larry McDonald, who ran him a very close race in 72. I don't think McDonald can win because McDonald has some problems with a nasty divorce suit or alimony suit or something during the last 6 months. And also I think the fact that he is a national officer in the Birch Society, while it gives him strong...
He announced 2 days ago.
He did? Okay. Well, I've been resigned. Okay. I don't think he'll beat Davis in the primary, but I think he can help continue the scarring up some. And it's going to be awfully hard for someone to run against a POW. Collins, Bob Hope showed in, I think, 3.5 minutes on him in December. He has a make a good upfront candidate. One-on-one, I'm sure that we'll have some problems with his lack of detailed knowledge on some of the issues, but I think this can probably be overcome. He will have primary opposition, a boy named Ernie Norsworthy, who is a former HUD official here, is running. He's a nice fella. Not a kook candidate, but he's got no chance. Well, first of all, you never get a district as liberal, as a conservative as the 7th district to give much support to the former HUD official. He sort of axed out of it before he ever get started. But he naively jumped in, and there'll be a primary, but I think Collins will take that easily. In fact, it'll probably be an advantage. It'll give him a chance to get some early coverage and publicity and so forth before the general election. The 6th district, Newt Gingrich, who is a professor of history from Georgia State, running against Jack Flint. That would probably be the biggest surprise of all, because I think Gingrich is going to win for a number of reasons. One of them is that Flint has been caught trying to avoid a paving assessment in Griffin by selling off 1 foot perimeter of his property to a staff member in Washington who cannot be found, and thereby avoiding something like a $1,200 tax bill, which is student politics. It also looks like Davis may be involved in another problem involving a very controversial Corps of Engineers project, Squirrel Bluff.
Flint.
Jack Flint.
You said Davis.
I meant Flint. Gingrich is a good political pro. Usually I figure they make the worst candidates of all. Wouldn't give them a high shot. Also, the name Gingrich is not exactly a household name. But his campaign is going extremely well. Mechanically, it's probably the best in the area that I cover. I think if the Little Bluff Dam problem gets as big as I think it will, that we'll capture the district against Flint. Also, the reapportionment has made the district a lot more likely to be Republican than almost any others we've got outside the metropolitan area. When they reapportioned last time, they sliced off South Fulton, and that area has been represented by a Republican congressman for the last 6 years, Fletcher Thompson. And Fletcher was very popular out there. The Republican vote is good. I think it gives Gingrich a big advantage in starting out there. We've got a candidate in the 9th, but it's not a serious deal at all. He's got no business running. The governor's race.
So you in Georgia, you see keeping the one you have, picking up two more.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, right. Blackburn's going to have the roughest race he's had in a long time. Elliot Levitas probably will be the candidate against him. Elliot's a person. He's a smart fellow. I think philosophically he's not going to match the district that well. But it'll be maybe Blackburn's first real race in several outings. the only statewide Republican candidate this year to create any real enthusiasm was John Savage running for lieutenant governor's race. And that race, consequently, among Georgia Republicans, is going to get a whale of a lot more attention and consideration than it normally would. But just because he's by far much there, I think, you know, that really has gotten any excitement going. The three.
Why didn't you run for governor?
Well, a number of reasons. First of all, couldn't raise the money. Secondly, a decision along those lines came far too late. In fact, the decision on the part of all the candidates came far too late. They were still hoping that a Phil Campbell or a Bo Calloway would be the candidate into February, which was later than they should have still been arguing that point. By the time it was apparent that no really well-known heavyweight candidate would be in there, it was too late for a John Savage to re-gear and try to put it together. There were no professional campaign managers left. And no one in the state that I know of picked up the campaign at that point and started to put it together. In Georgia, you've got to have a Republican candidate statewide has got to have some form of a field organization. And I'd hate to try to put one together this late.
Right.
Because Georgia's a big state. Don't know where you start finding personnel.
I hope so, too. And I think it just
wouldn't work. I've discussed it with John several times. Did all I could to discourage it, because I think he's got the right idea and building on a four-year plan to run for governor. I think it'll work in the long run. Hey, give him a far better chance of success. If he lost this year, it'd be
bad. I understand that. We'll just go on.
I think the Georgia primary, as I have been saying for
couple of years,
Maddox, I don't think he's going to win the primary. If he does, it's going to be a very narrow thing, and he's going to enter the general election wounded.
Okay.
And it's really a shame we don't have a strong candidate, because this could have been the year to pull it off. But everybody thought a year and a half ago that Maddox was unbeatable. Too popular to overcome, and so forth. But Phil Campbell was the only person I talked to
that
had any other idea at all on it. And Georgia governors just traditionally don't get reelected.
Okay, fine.
It creates too many problems.
All right, bye-bye.
In the primary, I think the outcome will be between George Langford and Harry Geisinger. Geisinger is doing a much better job of putting the campaign together mechanically, as far as I can tell. But I haven't done any real close looking, because I didn't want to get involved in the Georgia primary any sooner than I had to. Since I've been connected with Georgia politics, that sort of puts me in a little more critical position in some of these other states where I don't have any inbred situation. Moving into Florida, I don't see any problem with any of the candidates, any of the incumbents we have, other than the Senate race. And I think we're going to lose the Senate seat.
Who is the Democrat running in that race?
Probable. There's several. Horn, I think, is the more likely winner. Now, if someone like Pettigrew wins
it
we would get the liberal-conservative collision down there, perhaps, with a candidate, and could retake the Senate race.
Okay, fine. Does he need to be briefed?
But I think we'll have...
What's the situation on Gurley now?
He's just been indicted on this not reporting deal.
Okay,
no, but I mean in terms of the primary.
Well, nothing is public. It's been speculated that two state senators might run the primary. They're not the problem. The problem would be Paula Hawkins, and I understand that she's already moving people back into the state and planning to oppose him. And if she does, it would be a bitter primary, and it could cost us more than the Senate race if it gets that bad, because Florida Republicans just can't survive a bitter primary. Neither can the Democrats. That's what elected Claude Curry.
I don't know. It's a little chaotic.
One of the reasons, of course, is the primary there comes so late. It comes middle of September.
Well,
it ends up being, by the time if they have a runoff, which the Democrats probably will have in the Senate thing, you're down to within 4 or 5 weeks of the general election. You don't have enough time to heal all the wounds.
Can anybody else help?
We ought to recapture the fifth. Ought to take the 5th Congressional District. We've got a primary there, Richard Kelly, and the judge over in Tarpon Springs. And Lou Earle, who is a dentist and representative from the Orlando area, Winter Park, actually. I think my guess right now is Earl probably would be the stronger of the two candidates overall, but Kelly comes from the most Republican end of the district and could have an advantage in the primary. But the Democrats don't seem to have a real strong candidate there right now.
Okay,
I'm trying to find somebody to run the 4th, which is Chapel's district. I understand it's been rumored sometime that Chapel might be invited. If he is, then that could be a distinct possibility. But the two candidates we had potentially there, both of them, for one reason or another, pulled out. The governor's race, I said, Jerry Thomas, former speaker of the state senate down there, is our candidate, a strong candidate.
Okay.
Askew, I think, is vulnerable in a number of things. His busing stand, for one. The race will be won or lost in the panhandle area of the state, and people up there view Askew about like people in Georgia view Jimmy Carter. He ran as a conservative and turned to be a liberal, and now he's running for, and has been running for vice president hard as he can go. And I don't believe at this time that he'll even carry his home county of Escambia. So he's also got to face a primary against his lieutenant governor, who knows where the skeletons are buried. And I understand he's Adams is going to cut him up one side and down the other. I don't think Adams can win, but I think he can leave Askew thoroughly carved up, and the Democrats in the same sort of divisive primary situation that we're facing right now in the Senate race. We'll have candidates, a candidate in the 15th against Donnie Fussell. Don't give that a good shot right now. We've got a fellow running in the against Haley in the 8th, but he's not a very substantial candidate at all. And unless Haley steps down, we get someone there. I don't see any other chance of doing anything in Florida. Alabama, this year, of course, having to concentrate strictly on legislative races, we've got more candidates than ever had before, about 29, I think 28, something like that. They're not opposing Wallace, not opposing Allen. So their chance might be the Democrats won't take the general election seriously. Their primary, of course, is right upon us now. I'm not sure when it is. It's May 6th, okay. So their real battle is going on right now. Say we could sneak up and capture some legislative seats in November. The only serious, I don't think even our incumbents there are having a problem. We kind of being opposed in the Birmingham area but by a woman who's a city commissioner. But he'll get most of his vote out of the very conservative suburb area anyway, so I don't think it's a problem. Mississippi, Trent Lott and Thad Cochran will be retained without any serious problem. And we've got an excellent candidate against Boyne in the 2nd District. We probably would have won the 2nd District in 72, except the candidate we ran must have been the only liberal Republican in the entire state of Mississippi. And Boyne is liberal. Boyne, like Askew, reacts to criticism, and I imagine he'll be mumbling to himself by the time he gets through criticizing. The Republicans ran a poll, and I had a copy of it here, for example, that the 7th question said, have you heard that Congressman Boyne is a frequent participant in the cocktail circuit in Washington? And then do you approve of this kind of activity, this kind of reputation for your congressman? I asked Clark Reed, well, just go ahead and ask if a fellow had a drinking problem. He said, after we finish the survey, he will have. So they'll take Boyne apart.
Who's running?
His name is Ben Hilbin. He was the youngest state senator ever elected. He was a Democrat, and of course he switched over. His father for years was president of Mississippi State University, which is the largest school in terms of numbers. And of course Starkville is in the district. He's now a lawyer, tree farmer, cattleman, and about 40 years old, I think. But I understand he has the backing of John Bell Williams and two or three other former Democrat congressmen down there. Mississippi could well be the next state to just suddenly overnight surprise everybody and become Republican. Like Georgia, they're electing an awful lot of Republicans on the local level. The kind you don't notice until all of a sudden you walk out and they're there. They, I think, got something like 14 or 15 mayors in Mississippi last year. And in Georgia, we find them all the time. We don't even know exist. I can imagine the number of county commission chairmen and mayors in Georgia probably exceeds 20 now. And it's there beneath the surface. And it's philosophical. It's not party. And sooner or later, I think both states will just wake up and be Republican. Louisiana is a problem for Republicans. The registration there is about 2 or 3%. It's probably the most corrupt state anywhere down here. And I thought vote theft in Georgia is bad. I think in a general election, maybe 20% of the vote in Georgia is crooked. I mean, just absolute fictitious. In New Orleans, it's even worse. We just got through the campaign Tuesday. We got the highest voter Republican has ever gotten in New Orleans, but it was still only 42%.
For mayor?
No, for state senate. I think Trina will be reelected. I think we'll probably have a fairly tough race. I think any Republican down there is going to have a tough race. I got another candidate, Henson Moore, running against John Rarick up in the 6th, I think it is. And Henson, I think, would be a better than average candidate. Whether he can be Rarick or not is another matter entirely. I think it'd be worth watching, but I don't expect to win that one right now. I do expect to win the Mississippi. Then the last state is Arkansas, which is a disaster. They haven't gotten over Rockefeller's effects on the party out there. They're running a gubernatorial candidate, the executive director of the party, to keep the name in place. He won't win. He's former state JC president, and good, probably about as good as they can put together for an executive director out there, but no chance of winning the governor's race at all. They got a gal running against Wilbur Mills. If Mills gets indicted in the milk fraud thing, which has been rumored for some time, or if he has physical problems like a nervous breakdown or something, then we've got a good candidate. If Mills was not running, he would jump in there and run. It would mean having to try to figure some way to get the gal out of the race so that he could be put in there as a replacement candidate. That's the only real shot I see at that. Of course, the big race out there this year is the Bumpus Fulbright deal. Everybody right now gives Bumpus a heavy lead. Again, people I talk to, and I have to modify their views by the fact that I'm not that impressed with the people we have out there to work with. Generally, the party is just not that strong. They predict that as it gets closer to the primary, it's May 28th. No, May 8th, excuse me. No, that's right, May 28th. Registration date. But as we get closer to the 28th, Fulbright will pull ahead and probably squeeze out a victory. If he does, we've got a candidate, John Harris Jones, who will be running against him. On paper, he looks real fine, but in person, he's not a very forceful candidate, and I don't think they can finance him. If Bumpus wins, I don't think there's any chance of making a scratch in the thing. If Fulbright wins, it'd be worth trying to scar Fulbright a little bit. But I don't think we'll win, pick up anything. I think John Hammerschmidt will be reelected. I don't think we'll have any gain in Arkansas. In fact, overall, I'd say of the 7 states I have, I think Arkansas is the least likely to show any real progress in the foreseeable future. And that includes Alabama.
That includes Louisiana?
Yeah. Arkansas is just everything. I see no real strong leadership. Not that I see that much in Louisiana, but it can be the chances of putting it together down there, outside of the New Orleans area, I think will remain much better than Arkansas.
So you see Georgia, in this kind of rank order, Georgia, Mississippi, South Carolina, Florida?
No, this year, the best state this year for me is South Carolina. I'd say South Carolina, then Florida, then Georgia, then Mississippi.
Do you think you're going to pick up 2 governorships, lose 1 Senate seat, and pick up 6 congressional seats?
And
six to seven.
We could pick up, we could pick up seven. We could do something like win a Henson Moore seat if things go as I think they might. There's a big backlash to the Watergate thing down here. The people here don't like the press. They're still upset because of the coverage of civil rights things back in the early 60s. They're basically anti-press. And you see, you get all sorts of reactions around here that are not typical of the rest of the country. And it could be the type of thing where everybody says, well, let's throw out everybody that's in office. That's the way we ended up taking over city government in Columbus, the second largest city in the state. It was a throw the rascals out thing, and they swept in the Republicans, and the Republicans have held it now for, 6 years, I guess. If corruption becomes a real issue down here, people become suspicious of government and entrenched power. Entrenched power is all Democrat.
In Florida, who would it be the people we should talk to really understand Florida politics, Republican politics in Florida?
Well, you got to separate the state into sections. Greg Boston down in the West Palm Beach area, one of the best, I think, probably. Because Tommy Thomas, I think, is pretty good feel.
Where is he from?
Panama City. Herb Harmon has been working with the legislature a great deal. He's from the state headquarters. He might have a better feel overall, but certainly he and Bill David would be good.
Who in the legislature?
I'll talk to Harmon and let him spot you around the
What's
state.
What's his name, Herman?
Herb Harmon.
Is he in the legislature?
No, he's a staff man in the state, Republican state headquarters.
In where, in Tallahassee?
Tallahassee. Bill David is the executive director.
You're not worried about you.
Trying to think of anyone else.
What's Kramer doing these days?
He's staying in Washington mostly. I think his interest really is national politics.
How about Paula Hawkins?
Well, because Paula's in the Public Service Commission, and she's very active in. She's making a big splash, getting good treatment from the press, generally doing a good job, which is one reason.
She's in Tallahassee?
Well, no, she's out of Orlando, Maitland, actually, one of the suburbs of Orlando. And she travels all the time. She's hard to run down. But the problem is that her views, like Gurney's, are going to be sharply affected by primary considerations. You got emotions involved there. She's mad as hell at Gurney.
Yeah.
Gurney's mad as hell at Paula. And their viewpoint in terms of statewide politics is going to be vastly affected by that.
You kept mentioning professional management. Okay. You see that as the key to many of these races? Why?
All right.
Well, a number of reasons. First of all, we're fighting a system down here entrenched within the Democrat Party that, in effect, provides them with professional management. You know, they've got the agricultural department employees and the highway department employees and these others that they know where to pull the strings of the county courthouses and so forth. We don't have that. Most of our people came along in '64 forward, and they got in because they were idealistic amateurs or philosophically inclined, but very little professional, in the way of professional politicians. We don't have many people who've ever held office that have been in that many campaigns. You know, we get the JC presidents and others who decide the world needs improving, and they jump on a white horse and go charging off. Because I'm also prejudiced, having been in that business now for quite a while. And I think a campaign manager is pretty close to being as important to winning a campaign as a candidate. We can't make mistakes down here and still win. And we made enough mistakes in the Callaway campaign to have won it. In fact, I think we did win it. But, still there were a lot of mistakes that a professional, experienced campaign manager would not have made.
Where do you see the Republican Party in those seven southern states now as compared to, say, 2 years ago or 4 years ago? See, the period we're looking at is 1948 through 1974.
Well, now, it depends whether you're talking about the party as an organization or the party in terms of electing people.
The party as an organization and, you know, the performance of some of its functions, like nominating candidates or finding candidate selection and all that.
Well, as I said earlier, in the South, there hasn't really been so much a one-party system as a no-party system. And it's, and people here do not yet fully relate to party as such and its activities. That's one of the problems I think we have in the area. South Carolina has a pretty good party. Mississippi has a pretty good party organization. Florida has a pretty good party organization. Beyond that, it's shadowy, very, as far as a real cohesive state organization is concerned. If you had to put together a campaign in Georgia and depend on the Republican county chairman to do the work, you might as well wrap it up before you get to start. But in terms of electing people, Georgia is doing tremendously well. In fact, I think we're probably succeeding in spite of the party organization.
Would you say the people basically in the party are ideologues? Or?
Yeah. I think that's pretty consistent.
Pretty conservative?
Very. Except when you get to Arkansas, and there you have a strange breed. Yeah, in South Carolina, you got the conservative and moderate wings. The moderate wing is headed by Strom Thurmond.
What do you see going in the future?
Philosophy?
Yeah.
Well, I think Virginia pretty well mirrors the case. I see the Democrat Party coming closer and closer to the philosophy of the National Democrat Party. I see people like Jimmy Carter, Dale Bumpus, Fritz Hollings, Reuben Askew, being the leaders in the Democrat Party per se, which is fine, because the masses of the people will not be that liberal. Outside of Atlanta and Dade County and a few areas like
that. When you say liberal, you were speaking in terms of race or economics or what?
No, I'm speaking in terms, well, race is always, race will always be there as a subtle issue somewhere. Economic, in terms of hawk versus dove type thing. South Carolina, for example, probably one of the most militarily inclined states in the country. One reason is that it's so heavily armed. And Georgia is not far behind. Again, for the same reason, you move the defense industry, and you knock out the largest industry in the state. But you know, I think, the South became a viable Republican area, the Barrigo-Warder in 64. And I think those issues, real or imagined, he's been identified with, continue to be the predominant thing. And race was not as important then as a lot of people elsewhere probably thought at the time. It's an issue, but probably not altogether for the same reason. A lot of the race issue relates not so much specifically to white versus black as local versus big government. In other words, a lot of progress could have been made in solving the core problem had it not been a case of someone coming in and saying, this is what you're going to do. There's a natural inbred nature in the people in this area. And you can convince them, you can persuade them, you can trick them or anything else, and that's fine. But the first time you come in and try to force them to do something, even though it's something they may want to do, they'll sit there all day and argue with you. It's an innate character of the people. I mean, maybe I'm the same way myself. I probably made a career in the Air Force until they started trying to force me to stay in. Then I wouldn't have stayed in under any circumstances. I think they saw they got a hate target in the form of the federal court system and the press. And day in, day out, they were berated, and it was a resentment of that, as much as anything.
So you see it'll keep moving in that direction.
Yeah, now I think you're going to find a lot, certainly percentage-wise.
So what you're doing is moving disaffected Democrats, who are basically conservative on social and economic matters, into the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Which will mean movements of white, middle-class whites, rather mm-hmm. than any blacks or...
Yeah, and rural voters. You look at the returns.
Are you saying that Kevin Phillips' hypothesis is working?
Yeah, distinctly. You know, I think it's irreversible, no matter what happens in Watergate. If you look at the McGovern, the reason McGovern, Nixon got such a heavy percentage of the vote down here had nothing to do with Nixon's popularity. He would get pretty close to the same vote today if the same race was held. They weren't voting for Nixon. They were voting against McGovern. You know, McGovern and the McGovern philosophy as they saw it was the worst thing in the world. It was unthinkable. You know, it was beyond wanting a Barry Goldwater.
Well, then are you also saying that states like North Carolina, or maybe South Carolina, where you have a conservative moderate fight within the party, the conservatives are going to win it?
Yeah, ultimately. Yeah.
As a
Well, the same thing in Virginia. You know, Holton did not control the party. In fact, he wasn't even invited to the last convention.
So in the case of Holzhauser, that's just a transient sort of thing to go back to being conservative again.
Right, and here again, I'm not that familiar with North Carolina. In North Carolina, I think...
No, but I'm trying to get you to think about the hypothesis.
But I think North Carolina may be a great deal farther to the left in the overall spectrum than Virginia or South Carolina on either side of it. I get that impression for some reason. I haven't worked that much in North Carolina, but I get an idea that they're not as philosophically concerned within the party organization.
Where do you see the relative strength of the two parties in the 11 states of the old Confederacy, say 10 years from now?
Okay, 10 years from now, I think South Carolina will be, will be dominated. The party will be dominant there. I think Florida will always be sort of swing. However, as Northern Florida, which is redneck about like South Georgia and South Alabama, as that change occurs, then that'll be the balance of power in the favor of the Republican Party. Georgia, I think, will be Republican. Mississippi, I think, will be Republican. Arkansas, I see, is farther down the line. Louisiana is going to be a question mark, but I think that the northern part of the state, the rural area, probably will be headed in that direction. Alabama, what gains and so forth are made there depends on what happens to George Wallace. As long as George Wallace is on the scene, unless something happens, he's going to dominate Alabama politics and have a certain effect on this whole area you're talking about. Wallace is probably the biggest single problem for Republicans right now.
Do you see a reversal then of the role? The Democratic South becomes the so-called hardcore straight Republican South?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're going to find...
What does that mean then in terms of national politics?
Well, I don't know because, you know, I don't have that much of an insight. Don't feel I have as much of an insight in individual states, what may be happening there. But certainly, as far as the party is concerned, for the next several years, the South is going to be the most important, single important area, I would think, in terms of this. Certainly this year it is, in terms of the area we're going to pick up.
Where do you see the Republicans moving in so far as blacks are concerned in the South?
Okay, we're in Georgia. We're picking up some blacks for the first time. We had a black Republican elected mayor of a rural town back in December. You know, unthinkable. We've got one in town.
This is where?
Richmond Hill is his name. It's in Greenville, Meriwether County. We had a town about 3,500 to 4,000, I guess, something like that. And it wasn't, the vote, I understand, was not a racial line. In Columbus, we get the majority of the black vote there. Because the local government has been a very progressive local government. It's done things that the entrenched Democrat administration had never got done. It's turned the entire city around. The only consolidated government in the state. You know, tax rate of increase is less than before. And the mayor that did all that was killed in a plane crash, and Republicans elected a replacement. And I never thought they could do it. I'm from Columbus. But we've got a black city council member down there. I ran his campaign in 1970. Got tricked into it, otherwise I wouldn't have touched it with a 10-foot pole. But he won. Last time he wasn't even opposed. He's now vice chairman of the party, and he's put together a black consulting firm. And they're gonna win some elections for us somewhere down the line. In Georgia, we don't have to have a majority. I mean, if we can get 15% of the black vote, confuse another 20%, and we've chopped in heavily to the solid Democrat bloc. What we really need in Georgia to win a statewide, to elect a governor, is about another 120,000 liberals to move into the state.
What would that do?
Well, it would give the Democrat nomination to a liberal candidate, an Ellis Arnold in 66, for example, or a David Gambrell for the Senate in 72. And when we get that, it'll be just like Virginia has been.
Mm. Maybe so.
You know, Richard Russell was far more likely to have been a Republican starting again from scratch than he is to be a National Democrat. Jim Allen in Alabama is far closer to the Republican deal. And Sonny Montgomery, name them all over the South.
You can. All right,
in fact, I'm one of the few people that if they ever got down to a situation of redesigning the parties, you know, heck, we'd come out ahead down here. There was some way of not having to bite the bullet on, if we were able to change everybody's title across the board, we would take over control of a lot of the state governments down here overnight. You know, it's having to make that physical shift that creates most of our problem now.
You mean? By physical shift, you mean from Democrat to Republican?
Yeah. See, right now it's all right for somebody to be in the legislature and be listed as a Democrat. Because folks back home know he really isn't. That's just the way he's listed. For him to become a Republican means standing up and saying, yes, I am a member of a political party. And that's harder to do. It puts him under, it runs a certain risk. And that consequence, not many of them wouldn't do it.
What was the effect in Georgia of the
7275.
Party fight in 1970 in the governor's race.
Insignificant. Jimmy Bentley had the backing of most of the party activists. The people that elected Hal Suit primarily were people out of the Atlanta metropolitan area who voted in the Republican primary. Well, they just never voted, never really had one before. They were voting for Hal Suit, they saw him on television. In DeKalb County, DeKalb County is solidly Republican. They were going trooping to the polls to take care of the local races. And when they got there, they voted for Suit. They were not the real party organization types. As a result, we didn't come out of that race